12.
Miro, may I enter your dream?
Yes.
You are now capable of instantaneous travel.
I am.
Likewise, we have seen Peter Wiggin and Thulium Delphiki demonstrating and practicing the same powers.
I know.
Some of the brothers ask me, when will Jane or the Hive Queen teach one of us to do this?
I wish I knew the answer.
I know the answer already.
Will you tell me?
Never. You misunderstand me in the confusion of the dream. The answer to the question the brothers asked me is never. They cannot learn it.
Why not, old friend?
Because it takes a greater capacity and strength than most Ayuas have. All Hive Queens have such capacity, or they would not have been called in from the darkness. But only a tiny number of Pecaninos have it, and among the Pecaninos, that capacity can only be used in the third life, the life as I am living it.
The life as a tree?
The life in wood. We have no use for movement, then. As long as our human friends will transport our little ones, we have little to fear from our inability to transport them ourselves.
What about humans? Surely we are not all of such great capacity.
The queen tells me that she has met only 5 such Ayuas among the humans she has known face to face. The first was Ender, and the man Peter, who is now his vessel. Then you. Then Wangmu. Then Thulium.
4 so far.
Jane, of course, but the human body came later. The queens brought her out of darkness themselves, and they chose her as if they were choosing the greatest of queens.
That was well done.
There will be no others. She wanted me to warn you, preferably in a dream, that when or if the 5 of you cease to live, that kind of starflight will end.
Unless some engineers devise a way to do it by machine.
The queens believe that is not possible.
They also believed that humans could not develop faster-than-light communication. Yet in the few years between the 2nd and 3rd Formic Wars, they equipped every one of their ships with ansibles.
I'll remind her of this.
She'll be angry.
What will she do, send her children to scorch me with torches? Memorandum of Conversation. Father Tree Human and Miro Hibera, as cited in Ollado Hibera, the Ayua in theory and practice.
Si Wangmu was already aware that every analysis told them the atmosphere of Discoladora was breathable by humans without any filtration or augmentation. So when the darkness of Cubae was succeeded by the light of the sun rising behind a tall woodland, she only squinted and blinked for a few moments before her eyes adjusted. The smell of the air was somewhat unfamiliar, but not completely so. Wangmu thought there was familiar pollen in the air, and the tall trees looked like familiar shapes. In the other direction, though, the grassland was interrupted by patches of robust ferns, some twice the height of a tall human. Convergent evolution would probably create woody trees on any world with life, and competition would drive them to evolve greater and greater height. Yet on this world, ferns had not yet retreated to the lower reaches of deep jungles, where they had to learn to thrive in shade. These ferns were drunken on sunlight, huge and exuberant in their growth. Wangmu had learned from Han Feidze that there was no reason to suppose that evolution on other worlds would proceed in lockstep with the fossil record of the evolution of life on Earth. There was no reason to look for dinosaurs or the equivalent, or even for giraffes. High-level vegetation might not yet have any predators. If there were no insects yet, there would have been no reason to evolve flowers to produce seeds, and without birds or other swift-gutted animals, fruit would have no point. She listened. She looked. She looked down because she thought she heard a faint buzz. There was a bee on a tiny blossom rising out of the grass at her feet. She merely pointed at it. Peter nodded, pointed to a swarm of tiny insects, gnats, a few meters away. Wang Mu knew that if there were no larger animals to feed on, the insects would not have evolved means of extracting blood or flesh. If she walked into that swarm and they bit her, what would that tell her? That there were enough rats to be worth biting? Or that, at any moment, a rhinoceros might charge at them out of the bush? Stop thinking in terrestrial terms, she told herself. No rhinos, no rats. But ecological niches were not fanciful. They existed. She looked down for signs that small animals did live here, and perhaps graze here. She could not be sure if she was seeing rat poop or a random splash of mud from the last rainstorm. She scanned toward the breeze and felt its warmth, faint though it was. In that direction, there were clouds forming far, far away. But they would be moving toward them soon. Rain tonight, she murmured. Peter shrugged. We won't be here. We should already be back in Kyubei, said Wang Mu. Peter reached down and pulled up a tuft of grass by the roots. Then Wang Mu reached down and took the bee in one hand. She closed her fist loosely enough that the bee would stay alive. Let's go before it stings me and dies, said Wang Mu. And they were back in Kyubei. Wang Mu immediately moved to a plastic sample box and discharged the bee into it. She closed the lid, which had a few holes in it for air exchange. She had chosen the right kind of box. The bee buzzed around inside furiously. Wang Mu examined her hand. Did it sting you? Asked Peter. No, said Wang Mu. And it had plenty of time. Why would convergent evolution give it the same stripes and colors as a terrestrial honeybee? Asked Peter. Why does the grass grow in blades, like grasses from Earth? Asked Wang Mu. The temptation is to imagine that it's because they came from Earth. The way coconuts cross the Pacific to seed their palm trees on every island? Asked Wang Mu. I try to imagine a tiny bee-sized spacesuit. Cute. But of course, I'm only saying that humans might have visited there at some point. With Kyubei still dark, Peter and Wang Mu saw no reason to summon any of the lab workers before the start of their normal workday. So they made themselves comfortable either on or off the furniture. Peter first chose the floor, but after a couple of hours, Wang Mu came down from the examining table and cuddled beside him. That was how the lab workers found them in the morning, blinking themselves awake because the lights had all come on. Wang Mu explained succinctly that they had come from the surface of Discoladora, and the first order of business was to examine them, skin and blood, lungs and nostrils, and every crevice of their bodies, for microbes and tiny animalcules. Meanwhile, others could be working on isolating the genetic structures of the native grass and the bee that they had brought back. Peter and Wang Mu both detached their audiovisual recording devices so the things they saw and heard could be uploaded and examined minutely. It took the better part of a day for them to be thoroughly swabbed, probed, pierced, scraped, and angrily questioned by the high-level Lusitanian scientists who resented not having advanced notice of their coming, especially because this meant their underlings, the common lab workers, had already had the first look at pretty much everything. Wang Mu, detecting this, found ways to mildly say to each of the disgruntled bosses something along the lines of, "You must be so proud that your lab workers were so well trained, they were able to show initiative and begin collecting data for you to analyze." She saw that her words had the soothing effect she intended. She noticed when several of the top-level scientists repeated something like her message to the underlings. In mid-afternoon, Thulium and Sprout arrived. Cube suits had already been made to fit their small bodies, and they were soon dressed and took their places inside the quarantine bay. Wang Mu could feel Peter gearing up to defend himself for going ahead before them, but Wang Mu laid a hand on his forearm to still him. Thulium did not look angry or hostile, feelings that the girl had never shown much ability to conceal. And in a few moments, Wang Mu's judgment was proved right when Thulium said, "I think you were right. What if there had been a large predator right where we landed? What if it confused me so much I couldn't get away?"
"We were only there for perhaps 3 minutes," said Peter. "The Avlog will have the exact time. We saw no animal larger than a bee. There are forests of tall woody trees, or so they appear, and groves of 2-meter ferns. The rest is grass, and we brought a sample of that."
"The analysis of the scrapings and samples from your bodies show no alien intrusion," said Thulium. "All the microbes are familiar ones that you almost certainly brought with you."
"Is my microbiome so robust," asked Wang Mu, "that no alien fungus or bacterium could penetrate it?"
"We're still trying to think about it," said Thulium.
"Which means you have been thinking about it for hours," said Peter. "And you have hypotheses that you're reluctant to share. But we're not editorial panels at scientific journals. It costs you nothing to share your speculation with us."
Thulium thought for a moment, then nodded. "You are clean enough that we could release you into the Lusitanian population without a qualm, though we aren't going to. Quarantine is about giving alien life forms, which we might not recognize, time enough to develop inside your bodies."
"That's right," said Peter. "But that would not prevent us from going to Discoladora again, right?"
"Exactly," said Thulium. "Now that you've actually gone, Sprout and I won't go ourselves until you've had enough time to die or not die from anything you caught on the surface."
"Wise choice," said Peter.
"But we have a quandary. You might resent this question, but it has to be asked. Is there any chance that you might have carried that bee with you? Could it have got into your clothing before you came to Cubae?"
"The only bees that have been introduced to Lusitania are in the formic orchards," said Peter.
"Bees fly where they want," said Wang Mu. "If it came to Descoladora with us, we neither heard it, nor felt it, nor saw it," said Wang Mu. "The one we collected was on the grass, or rather on a flower growing up amid the grass. But I can't rule out its having been tucked into my clothing somewhere."
"The reason I ask," said Thulium, "is that its genome matches almost perfectly with the honeybee genome recorded back in the 22nd century.
"Before the Formic Wars," said Peter.
"There are differences," said Thulium. "It was born without a sting."
"How does it defend the hive?" asked Wang Mu.
"We'll learn the answer when we find and observe a hive, but the most obvious speculation is that it has no invasive predators," said Sprout. "Honeybees with no natural enemies."
"So you speculate about the possibility that humans deliberately released the bee into the environment of Descoladora as a pollinator. Did it evolve its stingless condition? Or was the gene altered?
Evolution also alters genes, said Sprout. The grass is another problem.
Terrestrial grass? Asked Peter.
Some genes have a distinct resemblance to terrestrial grass genes, said Sprout.
But they seem to be an insertion, a deliberate alteration.
Grass evolved late on Earth. The dinosaurs may never have seen any, but it may have evolved earlier on Descoladora. The Earth-seeming genes are all involved with protein production. Without them, this grass would be worthless to grazing animals from Earth. Goats, sheep, and cattle could all starve to death while eating their fill. Earth birds would starve eating the grass seeds. But with those changes, this grass will be super nutritious to grazers and even more useful to the bodies of birds.
It's an avian paradise, said Thulium. Whether birds waited for the seeds or swallowed leaf or stem bits, they could live on it.
We didn't see any birds, said Wang Mu.
You were there 3 minutes, said Sprout.
In a meadow, said Wang Mu, with so much nutritious grass, much of it in seed, you'd think at least some birds would have been there feeding.
You were there in the early morning, said Sprout. On Earth, that's when the songbirds do their best singing.
So we have ascertained that Descoladora is not Earth, said Wang Mu.
But the two samples of its biota were largely or partly related to species from Earth, said Peter, suggesting contact and deliberate genetic tailoring.
Genetic tailoring, said Sprout, which might have been done by humans to accommodate the needs of Earth-born animal species, or which might have been done by an elaborate molecule introduced from another world.
Did you find the Descolada virus? Asked Wang Mu.
If we had, said Thulium, we would have led with that. But we've only ruled out the presence of the Descolada in the nuclei of the bee and grass cells. It will take days to work our way through the whole cell. In the nucleus, though, the Descolada is huge and has no place to hide. If the Descolada were active, that's where it would be, if it follows the same pattern that it did on Lusitania.
There was silence for a few minutes. Somebody is transmitting digital data to the box, said Thulium.
If they notice the two of us, said Peter, then if we return to the same spot, they might be there to meet us. Is that good or bad?
And if they didn't notice, said Wang Mu, we should hike around a little, recording everything and inviting large creatures to be curious about us.
Don't ignore the possibility of long-range weapons, said Sprout. That's a wise point, said Peter. But I don't know what I can do about it. If someone wants to snipe at us, we won't know it until we're shot at. We'll get out immediately, if we aren't instantly killed outright.
I'm excited to go back, said Wang Mu. What are we waiting for?
Peter knew she was being mostly ironic. Did anyone else know that she had some bite in her humor? How do the periods of daylight line up? Peter asked Thulium.
It was Wang Mu who answered.
If we want to arrive at dawn again, we should leave here at midnight this time instead of 3 in the morning.
What about arriving just before dawn? Asked Peter.
About 10:30 tonight.
I don't want to arrive in the dark, said Peter. Even if the worst nocturnal predators are owls and raccoons or their equivalent, I don't want to meet them in the dark.
So, sleep until then? Asked Wang Mu. Meanwhile, said Thulium, we'll keep looking at the cells and the vids of your brief stay on the enemy planet.
In the immediate silence, Thulium said,
I was being ironic. If humans have colonized or terraformed or planted things on this planet, there's little chance it's the source of the Discolada.
And when no one replied, she added,
not an enemy planet, therefore.
Peter could only nod in agreement. But he could see that Wang Mu had been taken aback by Thulium's supposed jest. So he, too, thought through it. Even if it was a joke, it had crossed Thulium's mind to call the inhabitants of this planet the enemy. Not a good xenologist's attitude toward a newly encountered technological civilization.